Good evening, everyone. Happy quarantine. Hello, everyone. Welcome to this week's edition of Get the Fork Out. I'm very excited for our next guest, Gerhard von Schlieffen. He has been in the boat building game for a long time, and we're going to kind of tap into his experience on his view of a new build, like kind of what happens on the other side that the crew don't really understand. And then we'll get into why crew are and are not involved in new builds as much as they should or shouldn't be, pros and cons, and we'll go into it from there. Welcome, Gerhard. Really happy to have you on.
Thank you. I'm happy to be here.
Yeah, it's cool for you to talk to us about this, because I think it's a unique perspective that a lot of crew don't get. Why don't you give us a little bit of background about where kind of you fit into the yachting industry, how long you've been doing it, and kind of, yeah, without me explaining your perspective, why don't you tell us?
Yeah, well, I've been in yachting now for almost 18 years. I started off at a shipyard building sailing yachts, mainly being involved in the interior. And I've been involved in, now, I think, top of my head, 7 sailing yacht new build projects.
Okay.
And 5 multi yacht projects. Sailing yachts ranging from a little over 30 meters up to 70. And motor yacht projects around 100 meters.
All right.
So the first projects were mainly focused on interior, and now I'm currently employed as a overall project manager at the sailing yacht shipyard. Okay. So that's
excellent. So back to sailing yachts.
Yeah, back to sailing yachts. Yeah.
Is that something you grew up doing? Are you passionate, more passionate about sailing than motor yacht?
No, it was actually it was a coincidence that I started at a sailing yacht, because I did an apprenticeship over there, and basically they asked me to stay. So I spent there the first 10 years, after which I switched to motor yachts.
Okay.
For the last 7.5 years.
Yeah. Excellent. If you see me look down, I have questions on my phone, so I don't want you to think I'm like checking my messages here. Let's see. Yeah. So a little bit of background on how Gerhard and I know each other from a rather large project that was in Northern Europe that I designed a galley in it. Yet for numerous different reasons, I never saw the kind of end of the project until last year. So that was really interesting for me to see something that was at that point hand-drawn. This is before I was doing any 3D drawing. And it was really cool to go see that and, you know, be inside the space that I created and see the mistakes. Like, no one's going to do it perfectly. And it was cool to just be like, oh, okay, well, I won't do that again. That was a mistake. And it's really a good learning experience. And so that's kind of the background behind Gerhard and I. And then we've kept in touch of kind of asked him questions and just trying to figure out the new build industry and how, you know, galleys work and how galleys get designed, because on some boats, there hasn't been any kind of chef input. And what I've realized on the 3 new builds that I've done is like the chef input has to come from day one. It has to come from, you know, the GA, the original drawing. Otherwise it's a change order, which brings me to like, the next question is like, how many of those 18 projects were crew involved in from the start, or like an owner's kind of team?
The funny thing is that most project teams, especially from when you look at sailing yacht projects, are led by former captains and people with sailing experience. Mm-hmm. But in the motor yacht industry, you have people who graduated from naval architecture, project management, and they made it into representing a client for a new build. They are often supported by former crew, like an engineer or something, someone like that. But it depends also a little bit on the scale of the team. Mm-hmm. And sometimes they have only one guy, but sometimes, well, we've been around the table with maybe even four or six, up to eight. So that really depends on the project.
Yeah, and which brings me to my next question, but I'll circle back to, I don't know, a follow-up question on that too, but is there, on these new builds, do you think is there a large difference between if the boat is like purpose-built for charter or purpose-built for private? Or do they all kind of come up to box something similar?
Well, the yachts I've been involved in were mainly private yachts, and often not available for charter, or as not purpose built for charter. Yeah. And in that case, well, I'm not really in the place to say anything about like purpose-built charter boats,
right?
But I can imagine that there's a different take on crew input when it comes to a charter boat than when you have a single owner taking care of his crew and making sure they are happy as well.
Yeah, I don't know either. That's why I was kind of while I was asking. I would assume there'd be different things probably with the toys as well, but I guess what I'm noticing, and especially just what you said too in terms of the teams that are set up and their qualifications, which are massive. I mean, a naval architect, a very experienced captain engineer, is it's amazing. You need them. I'm not going to discredit them. They're very important, of course, but we're in the service industry, and in my opinion, like on some of these new builds, the service industry isn't really represented on the first initial GA, so it's a little bit difficult to come in after the fact when someone with no service experience has kind of designed something. And this is way down the list of questions I got, because this hasn't happened to me, but I think it's a good example where like a chef gets hired for a new build and maybe even 6 months before the launch, they're like, yeah, it's your galley, you can do whatever you want. But then he gets into it, he's like, or she, and it's 99% done. Like it's all finished. There's nothing to really change. Yeah. And then, maybe they're an experienced yacht chef, he or she, and they're like, well, what the fuck is this? Like, this isn't, and can I change it? And they're like, no. And they're like, well, who designed this? And then I think it's weird because I think like that chef looks like a princess, because they're like, why aren't you happy with this? This is a brand new galley. It's like, well, everything's in the wrong spot. Like no one.
Yeah. Yeah. So,
tell me what's your feedback on that.
Well, if you take for example that project that we were involved in together, was we started the design of the galley together, had a meeting with the contractor who built the galley, and that was really a nice process, and it was a really nice galley. But well, after 6 months, I think you left the project. Then another chef came in. Oh, he did the FAT at the factory, and he was like, this is amazing, this is the best galley ever. Oh, and cool. You know, we have talked about salamanders before,
and yeah, it's an
the
ongoing
first
topic.
Thing, because that chef also didn't make it to the end of the project, and at the end of the project we had the third and the fourth chef coming in, and the first thing they say, where's the salamander? This is too small. This is in the wrong place. Right. So talking about pros and cons, it's really valuable to have crew input. But that's also one of the downsides, is that crew rotation. And I don't mean in rotation schedule, but they get people leave and exactly. Get replaced.
Yeah.
And with all things, so many people, so many opinions. So it's what we concluded in the end, is you want to build basically the best base of a galley for every chef to be able to work in properly. And I think that's important for all areas in the yacht. You want to set the foundation for everybody to be more or less happy, and they can make small adjustments to find, let's say, personalize their working area.
Yeah, I agree. And I think also, like, the chefs get, you're not saying that, but let me make my point first. I'm not trying to jump on the tail of what you just said, but like, I think chefs will be like, or captains or project managers, whoever will be like, oh, all chefs are different. And we are, and that's a good thing. But I bet if you had the chef design a galley, even for another chef, it's going to be way better than if you let a designer do it.
And yeah, I agree on that, definitely.
Okay, yeah. Because I know, because I've seen the initial drawings of galleys on a GA, and I'm like, no. Like, I mean, this is wrong, this is wrong, this is wrong. And yeah, just with the flow, I don't know. I just think, like, if chefs do it, it's still going to be better than, say, if the captain signs off on it without having a chef look it over, make some changes, just to have flow, just to have something like reasonable happen. It's just strange to me that chefs get dismissed because we're all different, but we can still, I remember those initial drawings that we got from so-and-so that we can't say because of NDAs. And it was shocking to me. No, it was like,
yeah,
the dish pit was exactly where the owner would see it. You know, like, just like easy stuff like that, where, wow, the guy's going to be coming in here day and night. Let's not have this be the first thing they see. And that galley was beautiful, main deck galley. It's hard to mess those up. They're just going to be beautiful. Huge windows. It was awesome. Could have been a little bit bigger, but c'est la vie.
I think that's the main thing. If you get the input of professionals right at the start, it doesn't really matter if they make it to the end of the project or not, but right, they can provide a solid base for, yeah, let's say, the rest of the project, and also for the future, because even when a yacht is delivered, people will leave, and other chefs will come back, or officers or other crew will change all the time. So yeah, let's say the professional input from crew right at the beginning, I'm sure will make a project better.
Yeah, I think so too. I think at the end of the day, we're in the service industry. We're not in the transportation industry. I know the lines get blurred a little bit, but the idea is to show these yacht owners the best time possible, which involves giving them the best service possible. And I think that not just galleys, but whatever you can conflate as a service area, whether it's the pantries often get overlooked, laundry often gets overlooked, tender garages, you know, usually there's at least the captain's input on how to arrange that stuff safely, because I've seen some really dangerous tender garages like these. All these areas, when there's guests on board, pump. They just pump. They're busy. They're like 24/7. They need to be streamlined and perfect. And oftentimes, they're just a headache for the crew, where the job was already hard, and it's just that much more difficult because crew weren't involved from the very beginning. And not even like the owner's crew, but consultants. Just someone to just give it a quick look over that is in that field. But yeah, I mean, that's my spiel. That's my pitch. I think trying to be
involved. No, and I agree with you on that. And if you look, for example, at the project I've been involved in the past few years, there were like good boats in terms of service and crew areas. There were okay boats. And I was also involved in a boat where basically all the guest areas and the owners areas were designed to their maximum space and taking space from crew areas. So with very limited storage, space is becoming basically too small. That's specifically on the owner's request. Yeah. And that is also an important factor, which shouldn't be underestimated, that some clients have a really specific take on crew life. And maybe that's something for you to say. Money isn't everything, probably. So even if you get paid big money, having to work on a let's say on a difficult boat in terms of space and operations, it won't give you any fun, let's say.
No, you'll travel, you'll have to work twice as hard for something half as good.
Yeah.
Out of curiosity, were those the instances where you saw that the owner was taking all the space from the crew, were they first time yacht owners?
No, very, very much experienced.
Oof. Because usually the experienced ones, in you know, my opinion, they usually kind of look after the crew a little bit more. Work for one.
The project where we were involved in together was first time new build for that client, and he was all about happy crew is a happy owner. So that boat was really laid out for optimal performance by the crew. So you have a happy crew, which can provide a happy happy owner.
And I think that came down from one rock star captain making sure that all departments were covered. You know, all like I remember being on charters and having to draw that galley and just kind of figure it out. And also the chief officer, also the chief stew, just trying to figure out pantries, deck lockers, all that shit to make it actually work. And I think that's really important. That's the first time I got the idea. Like, this is how it should happen.
Yeah.
Should be built from the ground up by the crew, and then and this is a later question in the thing too, but also there's maybe you could talk to us a little bit about kind of the peaks and valleys in building a yacht. Like I said before, it's not easy, and then for me going up to Northern Europe and having many conversations about it, it's difficult. There's shortage of raw materials, there's all kinds of it isn't, I think, crew take it for granted that you know, all these big yards that make so much money. It's like, well, yeah, but the insurance is super high. And, you know, just what are some of the things that maybe crew don't understand about how a boat gets built and how difficult it is?
Oh, yeah. First of all, it's a long process.
Yeah.
And even starts before an owner comes to a shipyard. The owner is probably already busy with developing the yacht with his rep and maybe a naval architect and a designer. So they are already developing something shipyards can bid on. And at some point you contract a shipyard to build it for you. Then most of the outlines of the project are already fixed. Right. And then when you start, you have your build specification, which is, I won't say a limiting factor, but it determines already a big part of the systems being installed, the division between areas, how many square meters of guest area there is, how many square meters service areas, the number of crew cabins, stuff like that is already fixed. And when you take it from there, yeah, like you say, yacht building isn't easy. Can be a lot of fun, but it's quite challenging because basically we're building prototypes.
Every time.
It floats, but anything else is like new, and it's a floating city basically, because you have every system. What comes out of the ground in any city has to be on board, like the potable water, all the lighting, stuff like that, your power,
clean water, sewage, everything. It's just
everything. The city, like so it's that all has to be integrated into the one. Basically, it's almost an organism which exist around his guests, and that is incredibly labor intensive, where you have very detailed processes when it comes to engineering, construction.
Even sound, like in terms of like the engines and sound protection and
noise, vibration.
Vibration.
You can't imagine what we do to prevent vibrations coming from the engines and generators. But also the water causes vibrations. So it's there's so incredibly thing so incredible a lot of things to think about.
Yeah.
That's when it comes to if you only look at the interior, like there's a thousand questions for an owner to be answered, and that's only the interior. And you have the exterior, you have the engine room, you have all the technical systems. There's so many things that need to be decided. So it's a really intensive process between an owner, the owner's team, the shipyard, some subcontracted specialists. So it's a huge undertake. So yeah,
it's massive. It's massive. And in my small experience with it, it's like you're given like a space like this big for a galley, but usually it's shaped crazy and not normal. And then there's all kinds of safety features and stuff. And that space kind of gets eaten away, where there's all these things as a chef you wouldn't know about, that the walls need to be a certain thickness for fireproofing, that, you know, there needs to be two ways for the crew to escape, and the crew can't escape through a fireproof room. And it's mind-boggling. So it really is. For me, I feel very lucky to have the situations that I've had, because I've learned so much. Like, I've already made a bunch of mistakes. You know, like, I've already fucked up enough where I'm like, oh, okay, all right, I had no idea. No one would know that until you're told, and you're like, okay, got it, wrote it down. It's on my list. But it's an interesting thing to get both sides of it, too. And, like, I mean, and this sounds a bit, like, probably more nefarious than it is, but do you think, in terms of, like, a refit pattern, do you think yachts that don't have crew involved will do a much faster, bigger refit than if there's yachts with, and you might not even be able to answer this, but it's kind of a conspiracy theory. I'm like, well, if you don't have crew involved, then you get a bigger refit with a shorter time, like, because they're going to fix all the things that that weren't right from the build. Alex, you can start cleaning up. Sorry.
That's that also depends. I think the quality of the build itself has to do with the number of refits that need to be done, but also the quality of the maintenance. And of course, if just before a refit you get a new guy in the laundry, or you get a new guy in the galley, and they will take any opportunity to make adjustments to make it more their style or their way of working. So that will happen. I don't know for sure if that depends on whether there was a crew or a consultant involved in the beginning.
Yeah, that's true. I guess I'm just doing it from my side, where I'm trying to make a case for having crew involved from the start, because I feel like it prevents, or at least there's a longer period of time before an actual, like, bigger refit.
Yeah.
I just know from a galley standpoint that it is most likely true, but unprovable at this point. Like, there's no way to tell if that's true or not. I was just thinking, if, like, if you had a chef design a galley, if you had a chief stew design a laundry room, or a laundry man design the, or laundry woman design the laundry, then, you know, the refit could be pushed down the line a little bit longer, because it's the right equipment in the right space and no one's getting annoyed with it. But it's, as a yacht crew, it's hard to get that perspective, really. It's up to people like you, and then I'm going to have Dirk on next week, and he does galley refit. So I would just be, I'm just trying to, like, gather information and then put this out to other chefs to see, and because I think it's good to pass on a little bit of this experience about what it's like to on both sides of the new build, and how tricky it can be.
Yeah, well, if I look at the projects I've been involved in, there's always, well, refit, maintenance after every season, and I've been lucky enough to have been working for yards that don't compromise on quality. So it's the best appliances, it's the best people working on the yacht, the best suppliers. So those are all high-end products. And if they are maintained well, they can last really long.
Yeah,
but you will have your annual surveys. If it's a class registered boat, then you will still have your like your 5-year survey, 10-year survey, and then on. So, well, structural maintenance will still be there.
Yes. Yeah. I'm not. Yeah. The straw. I'm talking to like flow and ovens and I don't know. It's just like things in the galley get old quickly, and I think maybe that's because of it's quite a busy room, especially if it's a busy, say, charter boat or busy private where it's getting used all the time. Or maybe it's just like the jump in technology that's been quite recent, like in terms of induction being pretty much on every new build, massive combi steamers that are you can talk to with your phone. It's just an incredible change of technology right now, and it's quite impressive. But yeah, I don't. I'm just trying to just get your perspective on what it's like to build a boat and then just source out the best stuff for the interior. Like you said, there's tons of questions to ask. I imagine like different materials the owner might want on the his or her couches and what's covering the walls and things like that. Other than the service area.
Yeah, well, that's even for crew areas. Most of the yards standardize their crew areas in terms of layout, not necessarily layout, but more in detailing and the use of materials.
Yeah,
because by now they know from experience what materials are suitable and durable for crew quarters. And even there, some shipyards have really like more an offshore level take on crew quarters, which is for me as a builder is fine because it's like a really robust way to do crew quarters. Mm-hmm. The yards I've been involved in did either, let's say, a high standard. Yacht level crew or even full custom. So that also then a crew area involves also a lot of discussions about how cabins are arranged, the materials being used, but also the system behind it. Like we said, every room has AC, it has running water, so you have discussions about taps, lighting positions, the type of AC, what range of temperature should it be able to control, stuff like that. And that's only, let's say, the visible aspect.
Yeah.
And when it comes to, let's say, other crew areas, you have a laundry, you have a crew gym, you have lounges, crew mess. All these areas need to be set up for crew life, maybe possibly 24/7 for weeks on end. Yeah. And what people are doing, and for us, that's I think that's the most important part for people at shipyards is to create. Let's say awareness of what the crew is doing all day. I've been fighting all my time at yards to go on sea trials, just to experience being on board on a boat in use, let's say, because you get a little bit of a taste of how it's on board when, well, rolling waves, stuff like that.
Yeah.
As long as you're in a dock, the boat is solid and you're could either be in an apartment building or on a yacht. So that's
yeah.
But as soon as you are at sea, you feel that you're walking from side to side in the corridor. And
right.
that's when you know that you need a handrail, stuff like that. And yep. it's very simple, very straightforward, but the experience being shared by experienced crew with people from the shipyard create that awareness, and they tell us that they need to do safety drills, they need to do maintenance, and sometimes they have to get to a valve in 5 minutes or in an
Right.
instant. Sometimes they only have to get to certain parts of the boat every month or only yearly. So that's a lot of input that helps shipyards build better boats.
Yeah,
but
I wish. Oh, go ahead.
Yeah, no, like I said, that's creating awareness at the shipyards to understand what life on board is like and what's important for a crew when guests are on board or during a crossing, because that's also different. If you do a crossing, other things are important because you're probably with less crew. Than when you are in full-on operation with owner and guests on board. So
yeah.
For us, that's also important to understand.
I wish that everyone involved in new builds could come on a guest trip, like to from the designer to the shipyard to owner's rep, to see what our days are like and how busy they can be and how long they can be, because obviously crossings are important and safety is important, but the whole reason for our existence is service, you know, to show these people a good time. So I think that would be really amazing, but usually busy boat doesn't have a lot of extra beds around for someone to come. But I think that'd be massive input for a yard just to see how things go and get that real kind of crew perspective and why we complain about certain things, you know.
Yeah, well, I once proposed to a captain to be like a shakedown guest, so that we as a project team would come along for the first week of shakedown and have the crew show us basically what they are doing. But yeah, I would that's something that would be like an experience that would at least last a lifetime for any project team member for a shipyard, that they can experience what life on board is, and I wouldn't say from a like a guest perspective, but really from a crew perspective.
Crew perspective, yeah,
yeah,
yeah. To come on board when there's actual guests on board, and maybe it's the first trip or whatever. But I think that should almost be mandatory with the yard. Like there should be people on board just to have that input or have crew part of the. The organization that builds it. I just think there's a massive disconnect from the smart people that build boats and the smart people that work on them in terms of kind of getting things streamlined to a way. And not every boat either. I sound like I'm bitching about the whole industry, but I'm not. But there's some very, very famous shipyards in the industry that I think they just kind of do their own thing. I don't think they consult with crew at all. And you see these boats where money's no object and you're like, this is the galley.
Yeah.
This is the storage. Like, this is unbelievable. You shouldn't be allowed to build this.
Yeah, but that often also depends on how the contract is being set up, because you can have a contract where you have like full custom crew interior where people can play around with basically anything, or you have this really low budget crew quarters where you have to make sure that everybody has a proper cabin in compliance with all the rules and regulations.
Yeah,
and
the minimum.
The really bare minimum, and that's it. And you can choose from two materials to go on the wall and two materials to go on the ceiling and three on the floor, and that's it. So that also is really important when you look at stuff like this. Sometimes even let's say the owner's team has limited input on crew areas, because it's fixed in the contract that they can't have so much to say about these areas.
Yeah, that initial contract is quite important. That's why it's hard. It's a tough thing to kind of swallow when you're brought on board and you're like, oh, it's a new build. And I think the naive crew think that they can, they can kind of do what you want, or maybe the job is sold to them. Like, oh, you can, it's your galley or it's your pantries. And, if it wasn't in that initial contract, it's not happening. It's just not. If it's not in that first GA, forget it. Don't even worry about it. Make do.
Yeah.
So it's hard. I mean, it's a hard thing to kind of wrap my head around. It's just true. Would have to be involved, and who's going to do that? You know, like who's going to hire a consultant at that stage of like a new build process? That I'm sure the owner's team, the owner's rep has complete faith in the designer and the shipyards, and you know, that's good too. But it's too late. It's too late to make any of the changes for the service areas to make it more streamlined. Like I know you've seen some of these boats too that are built with service pantries on the main deck, where obviously the guests are going to be eating most of the time aft. And the thing is, like, you can barely fit one person in there. It's just not big enough, much less bring food down and serve drinks. And, you know, these logistical things are a nightmare for crew to deal with. And you just, from an owner's perspective, they're probably wondering why they ripped through crew. Well, the service areas weren't taken into consideration, and it's a nightmare for us. That worked twice as hard for something half as good. So, yeah. I'm glad to have you on just to figure out, to get it out in public, to figure out, like, I don't know, where it could be improved. You know, like, I don't know. Do you think do you see a future where crew are involved from that contract, from the first GA, or there's no money in that?
Well, I think there is, but it really depends on, at least I think that it depends on what an owner wants. If he has an owner's rep who's interested in involving crew, or that they just say, no, we rely on the knowledge of the shipyard, which are typically like schooled engineers instead of former crew. I think it's hard to say what is, let's say, the cure for this issue, right? Because a lot of shipyards have been building these yachts for decades, and over the last 20 years maybe, the yachts have become really big, because at first there was this 60 or 50 to 80 meter range. And at some point, it just took off and went over 100 meters. And then you got those really big yachts with a lot of crew. But that's still a relatively young industry. Yeah. And I think there's still a lot to learn. If I look at it from my perspective, the things that have been changing in yachting over the past years, It's incredible, but me, it was really important to see the difference between a project where the crew was involved in and a project where the crew wasn't involved in, and was mainly focused on the request of the owner. And that made me realize what is really valuable to a project. But it all comes down to, let's say, the first brief of an owner. Do you want to build a, let's say, a crew boat or not? Because...
Just let me interrupt you for a second, because I think we passed over something really interesting. So from your perspective, seeing the two, what did you notice? Well, I'm not trying to lead you down the path. Like, yeah, it was way better with the crew involved, but like, what did you notice between the two? I'm sure without crew involved, it's faster, cheaper to build. But tell me.
I don't know if it was a budget thing. I don't actually believe so. But for example, if you have a 100 meter 4000 GT boat or a 100 meter 3000 GT boat, because you want to stay below 3000 GT because of insurance and tickets and stuff like that. That's a really critical decision on what type of boat you are building. Because if you have a 100 meter boat below 3000 GT, and you still want to have this, like, the same amount of space for a guest area as a 4000 GT boat of the same length, something's going wrong there. So. Yeah. It's either a focus on guest space, or more a focus on crew space. And that's really a critical decision.
I have noticed that as boats get longer, it seems to be that boats are getting longer, narrower, shallower draft, kind of built for speed with less crew. And we're missing like those big kind of fat Northern European ones from olden days where it was a plenty of room for everybody, everything. Yeah. It was just great. But it's that, yeah, that cutoff, that 3000 cc cutoff, I assume.
Yeah, that's a big decision maker, I believe, that clients want to, well, and I don't blame them, because I would want to get the maximum out of, let's say, the available gross tonnage. And that limitation doesn't help with getting a good crew boat, because basically your mainly paying for, let's say, guest real estate, and the crew is, let's say, less, well, not the crew, but the crew areas are less important at that point. But if you get the project where we were involved in together, that was a really good good boat, and I'm sure that will stand out in the industry for great service areas.
Yeah, I think so too. I think so too. It was so cool to go take a walk around and see how good, like, not just the galley, but the pantries, and just everything made sense.
It was spacious, and not only the service areas, but also the cabins and the crew lounges, stuff like that was really well laid out. And to be honest, I'm much more eager to work on projects like that than on projects where you have to squeeze out every inch and you see that decisions are being made that go against the feeling of people allowing people to provide, well, the best service there is, because that's what those guests want, because, well, they are demanding, let's say.
Yeah, I did a little 50-meter project, and that was it. Like, there was no space. There's just none. And it wasn't fun, you know? It just wasn't fun to... I mean, it was challenging in a good way. I'm not going to say it wasn't fun. It was just difficult. It was a 50-meter, and it was just like... But what they wanted and where and how much guest space they needed, it was like, there's nowhere to put everything in the galley. And the pantry was the same. Try to help the pantry as well, but... Yeah, I know what you mean. It's just... And you don't get to choose usually which projects you get to work on or you want to work on. So you just have to take every challenge head on and do the best you can. But I feel you, where that project we worked on together was such a crew friendly project that I think that instilled in me, like, why aren't they more crew friendly projects? But, you know, it's a trade off with the owner and what's important to them. And if it's owner spaces and owner interior volume and real estate, then I understand that too. I definitely do.
Yeah. And another interesting trend nowadays is, of course, the support vessels.
Oh, yeah.
That I think that could be, let's say, a positive thing for, let's say, crew spaces on board, because it creates additional storage space, which you have close by. For stuff you don't need every day or within like an instant, and basically it's becoming this floating shed that's always there where you can put your tools and your bikes.
Floating shed. Oh, that's good.
Don't tell anyone. No, that's. That's what it is, and that creates more space in let's say in the main house, and I think that could definitely help getting those service areas set up better. And in the end, sometimes if you get somebody on who had a terrible experience on his previous yacht, and he gets like 10% more space, and he's like, "Wow, this is amazing." So it's also relative, let's say.
Yeah, I guess as much as I bang the drum of service area as well, the owner is more important than the service. So like if they want bigger shit, then they should get bigger shit. That does, for lack of a better word, trump the need and necessity of service area. Yeah, it's a complicated question. I think that's why I wanted to have you on, because I want to have like an open conversation about pros, cons, both sides, because it's not what I've noticed, because not just being a chef and just like not understanding how some of these galleys get built the way that they do. And then the more I learn, the more I see how more nuanced and complicated this whole process is. And galley and service areas are just a really small part of it, actually, but an important part, but it's quite difficult what you guys do. Yeah. I really, it's complicated. It really is.
And yeah, no, I'm happy. Yeah, and that's all. That's a difficult thing to do. You can't make everybody happy, but I must say that there's this. I don't know if it's a trend, but I think it's more like a development that over the past years you see a lot more former crew becoming involved in projects, and not always as a consultant, but. Sometimes they started this company supplying all kinds of linen, for example, or life-saving equipment or stuff like that. But all that with in mind their experience on board. And I think that's also a new development in the industry, where you get to work with consultants who have been consultants or a supplier for over 10 years, but have a history of living on board and working as a stewardess or as a chief officer, something like that. And they still have that experience. So I think the whole industry is growing and developing in a direction where more experienced people are supporting not only the yards but also the project teams and the owners teams, let's say.
Yeah, I agree with you. So I've been 20 years, the same time as you, and the amount of growth I've seen in 20 years, especially the last, I'd say 6 to 10, but more like the last 6 to 5, it's just unbelievable. The boats are just pumping out, and even with COVID, it's just, there's a line out the door for these boats. It's like the money's not the issue. It's material, supply chain, and just the, you know, everyone wants these, you know, the top yards in Northern Europe, and there's a line. Like, there's just a line. It's incredible, and the boats keep getting bigger, like you said. And there's not enough crew, and there's not enough expertise. It feels like the wild, wild west a little bit, which is an exciting time. And I'm not saying that in a derogatory way. I just think that's for everyone involved in this industry. It's great to be in something with like such a high growth index, where it's like future looks pretty good.
I think we'll
do all right.
Well, that's for sure. That there will be more competition, but I think in the end, the good yards and the yards with a long legacy will survive anyway.
Oh, definitely. Yeah. Oh, it's just been an interesting time, especially with COVID, to go from that boom, hiccup, and then boom again. We'll see what happens. But yeah, cool. Let me check my questions and make sure I didn't miss anything. But if we got, I knew that this, because I'd rather have this us talk, and it just kind of, if I can steer it into certain directions, but it's just so much better for us just to have a nice conversation, and it just comes out naturally.
Sure.
This is the topic anyway.
Yeah.
Well, this might be a good one. This is kind of, I think it's probably the last one. Do some of the MLC regulations get in the way of a good design in terms of, I know the 12 guest rule is kind of one of them.
Well, maybe that's a good limitation.
It's not bad for us, you know, like, I mean,
no,
you,
yeah.
Yeah.
No, I'm not sure. I know that, the MLC regulations, that was in 2006 when the last big update was done. Well, it had an impact on crew areas that they have to comply to certain dimensions, the number of the storage capacity in cabins, stuff like that.
Yeah.
And let's say that even a small cabin nowadays is well, okay. It's not a big room, but it's all the basics are there. And like I said, the yards I've worked on, everything is taken care of basically for crew. So I can't speak for other shipyards in other countries, but I think with the yards in the Netherlands, that's all being arranged okay. And if you look at regulations, class regulations, they are almost all there to make things safer, make things better. Let's say make sure that if you have a leak somewhere, it doesn't sink your boat all yeah. the way, but you have watertight doors, all safety procedures, stuff like that. So I think that only makes a boat better and gives yachts a strong guide to build their yachts upon, but also don't allow, let's say, owners who have lesser intentions to say, well, just give them a hammock and yeah. and a free toothbrush and you're good to go. So that's and yeah, I think that's also a good thing that those regulations are in place, and you get even if it's the bare minimum. The bare minimum is okay, and it's been taken care of, so that you don't end up with bad situations for crew on board.
Yeah, that's something I noticed. That question was more like almost to what I said before. Like you're given a box this big, but because MLC, it's like it's a lot more complicated than you think, and all these things kind of pop up during a design phase. You're like, yeah. Oh shit! All right, that wall is much thicker now, which pushes this over here, and then. There's a HVAC room there now. Okay, that's there. That there's a stairway here now. That needs to be this size, this width, so the room is smaller. And all these things yeah. crop up. So, and I agree with you. They're all for the common good of crew and guests. But it does complicate stuff a little bit. In a good way. That is a necessity. Yeah, it has to happen.
Yeah. Yeah, but like you say, if you have a really tight specification in respect of, let's say, acoustic privacy between cabins, walls get thicker. So the walls between cabins get thicker, but also to the corridor. So basically, you're making your cabin smaller, or it takes more space to create the minimum size cabin. So all things like that, and that's again back to the building specification. If you have a really tight specification or strict specification on noise, that has an impact on every area basically, because you might want to introduce another steel bulkhead because, well, that's a good sound partition, for example, but that makes a 90 mil wall into a 300 mil wall.
300, yeah.
So that's yeah. because you have a steel bulkhead and you have walls on both sides. So that's a big partition and that's a big change. But well, that comes from either strength or vibration, noise insulation. But all those factors are important and have an effect on the let's say the net space on board.
Yeah, I got burned on a galley design once or the initial stages because I didn't make the wall thick enough because it's I think it's a class. What's a fireproof room or fire? Was it a class A?
Yeah, class A, and it's typically
300 mil is for the thickness of the walls, right?
Yeah, because you have a steel bulkhead and walls on both sides. And yeah. Well, for example, if you do a big window, well, that sounds nice, but it has to be an A60 window. So that's not like a 10 mil glass pane, but it's a 60 mil glass pane or. Yeah. Something like that. So it's all yeah, regulations are there for a reason, and also requirements. For example, noise, like I just mentioned, is there, and but it all doesn't have an effect on space.
Yeah, it does and it doesn't. But is there somewhere online? I actually could ask you this offline. It probably doesn't matter to too many people with me, but like, where can people look this stuff up? Is it just in MLC and you just got to dig through it to figure out certain thicknesses and?
Yeah, there's if you look at, for example, well, you have the MLC regulation. You have MTA and you have Lloyd's, of course. First we had LI3 and PYC, which is now Reg Part A and Reg Part B. And in those regulations, you have all those endless descriptions of how systems should be made, how structures should be built, how systems should be laid out, how cables should go through a bulkhead, how piping should go through a bulkhead. It's all described in the regulations. And so, yeah, I think for a crew, sometimes it's good to good stuff to read to understand that how yeah. complex it is to build a yacht.
Yeah. How did you consume that information? Was it, did you just kind of learn as you go, or was there some kind of?
Yeah, that's basically how it goes. When you start working in yacht building, there are always experienced people who know all these regulations by heart, and bit by bit, piece by piece, you get that knowledge as well. And of course, every yacht has its specialists on that subject, and you can always consult like a surveyor or somebody like that or an expert consultant on specific topics and specific details, for example. So also for stuff like that, there's a lot of consultancy, like noise and vibration consultancies who can support you on that. So, but yeah, that's interesting stuff also for crew to understand how the building process works and what the limitations are, because, well, we just can't do whatever we like. Yeah.
Yeah. No, it's pretty impressive. It's pretty impressive what you guys do up in those yards. You're the only yards I've seen, and it's quite, I don't know, I almost feel bad that the crew criticize, like, well, why isn't this? It's like, well, that shit was so complicated to make in the first place. Like, come on, what do you want us to do? So I'm trying to understand both sides, because I think that's important too, rather than just be like, oh, well, why isn't it perfect? Well, there's a lot of good reasons why it's not perfect, Brennan. Just relax a little bit. But yeah, man, it's awesome. I love learning about it. It's really cool. But I really appreciate you having on coming on the podcast here, man. It's been cool having you on board.
Yeah, cool. It was nice to do this. Have a nice chat again.
That yeah,
was
we
a
will.
While ago since we last met, so cool.
Yeah. No, man, I appreciate it. Yeah, thanks for coming on this episode of Get the Fork Out.